and our theme is Israel's mighty but solitary deliverer. Israel's mighty but solitary deliverer. First of all, we have God's abounding grace in the first four verses. That theme has recurred again and again in the book of Judges, simply because the book of Judges is full of abounding grace, God's grace to an undeserving people. But it is so in a more, in a slightly different manifestation in these verses. First of all, we have Samson's choice of a wife. Samson went down to Timnath and saw a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. This was a sinful choice. We will see a number of glaring sins in Samson. And yet, as we mentioned last week, we must remember that Samson judged Israel for 20 years, so that the book of Hebrews indicates that that faithfulness to the Lord was a marked feature of Samson's life. So although in those parts of his life were given in the book of Judges, his sins seem almost to the fore, we must put it in the context that he judged Israel for 20 years. And keep his sins in proportion, if you like. He was an imperfect servant of the Lord, but a servant of the Lord nonetheless. But then we have his parents' view in verse 3. Then his father and his mother said unto him, Is there never a woman among the daughters of thy brethren, or among all my people, that thou goest to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said unto his father, Get her for me, for she pleaseth me well. It was right that Samson refer the matter to his parents, though he was, of course, following an established pattern in doing so, and seems to have done so with little real submission to his parents and little regard for their opinion and what they desired. And of course we know that today there is only the form very often of asking parental permission or even advice. But the objections of the parents were valid, though they appear not to have pressed them with sufficient firmness. This woman was of the uncircumcised Philistines. We saw what this meant last Lord's Day. The circumcised Israel were the professing church of God on earth, and the uncircumcised, such as the Philistines and as Goliath later on, were those outside the professing church of God. So that what is being said here is not simply that she belonged to another race, but that she was outside of the professing household of God. And in saying that she was of the uncircumcised Philistines, it shows that the women were counted with the men as both the circumcision and the uncircumcision. So this woman was from among the uncircumcised. She was of a different religion, not merely a different race. And we know, of course, from the word of God that those who profess the Lord must marry only in the Lord. So 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 39, we read, the wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth, but if her husband be dead, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will, only in the Lord. So there it's talking about the remarriage of a widow, but the point is that whether it's a widow or a woman who has never been married, or a man in similar circumstances, if they are Christians, they must marry in the Lord. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God, as God hath said, I will dwell in them, and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. So then, this was a sinful choice, and the parents' advice disregarded was sound. But then we have the amazing providence of God in verse 4. But his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines, for at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. The Philistines dominated Israel, and no doubt in some localities relations between the Philistines and the Israelites were businesslike, and they did have contact with each other, though those relations were always strained. But it was the plan of God to judge Israel, that is, to judge for Israel, to deliver Israel by judging Israel's enemies. And it was God's plan to do so not by making Samson a leader of an army. He differs from many of the other judges in that Samson never became a leader of the people. It was God's plan to use Samson as an individual, as a sole lone warrior, by giving him a supernatural strength as an individual, so that he would achieve what armies would normally be needed to achieve simply by the supernatural power of the Spirit of God. And this being so, there had to be an occasion in the providence of God that would stir up Samson and thrust him to the fore against the Philistines. And his marriage was to be that. We see the amazing providence of God, that this sinful marriage, which in terms of a marriage was a disaster, we might say, yet it was of the Lord's providence. And sometimes people use that phrase, something being of the Lord, rather loosely. Something is of the Lord in one of two senses. Either it's of the Lord in the sense that it is right and has his approval, or else it is of the Lord in that it comes about in his providence. And it's in that second sense that it is used here, that this was the Lord's plan to be the catalyst for Samson coming to the fore as the lone deliverer of Israel. And how God was using even this sinful marriage and sinful behavior of Samson. And of course, we should not be astonished, though we should admire the providence of God, we should not be astonished at that when we consider even the birth line of the Lord Jesus Christ, when we consider Judah's son Phares and the circumstances of his birth. And when we consider David and Solomon and the fact that he was born in the circumstances that he was, that God used even sinful actions and sinful behavior of men in the fulfilling of his promise of bringing the Redeemer into the world. And of course, he used the sinfulness of man in the accomplishment of redemption by the Redeemer on the cross, when he was crucified by wicked hands and slain. So then, the Lord uses even this sinful behavior of Samson to thrust Samson to the fore as his deliverer. Then secondly, we have a sample to show his calling. A sample to show his calling in verses 5 to 9. First of all, the Spirit of God enables him to kill a lion. Verse 5, then went Samson down and his father and his mother to Timnath, and came to the vineyards of Timnath, and behold, a young lion roared against him. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he rent them as he would have rent a kid, and he had nothing in his hand, but he told not his father or his mother what he had done. This was the Spirit of God giving Samson a supernatural strength. And as you'll see later on, it was supernatural. It was beyond, at times, anything that could be attributed to normal physical strength. And so the Lord gave him this supernatural strength and the faith in that God-given strength to act and to use that God-given strength. The performance of miracles required God-given in this case God-given strength, but also the awareness and confidence in that strength to actually go and perform that which the Lord required. And here, in the case of the lion, there was a sample being given to Samson as a sign of his calling and an encouragement to him of what the Lord would do through him. And Samson rightly kept it to himself at this stage, because it was a sign from the Lord to him. And then we have the honey from the lion in verses 8 and 9. After he turned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion. And he took thereof in his hands and went on eating, and came to his father and mother, and he gave them, and they did eat. But he told not them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. So Samson's God-given strength brought death to the mighty lion and nourishment to his parents, conveying the idea that as Israel's judge, he would bring destruction to the Philistines and he would nourish Israel. And then thirdly, we have the deliverer revealed. The deliverer revealed. Well, the wedding feast is mentioned first of all in verse 10. His father went down unto the woman, and Samson made there a feast, for so the young men to do. It was the pattern that there would be a feast lasting several days, and evidently the men at this stage feasted among themselves, and he was given 30 companions to be with him, to celebrate with him. And then Samson said unto them, verse 12, I will now put forth a riddle unto you. If ye can certainly declare it me within the 7 days of the feast and find it out, then I will give you 30 sheets and 30 changes of garments. It was common practice, apparently, to give riddles and as a means of entertainment. But he was wrong to use that sign from the Lord in such a manner. We are to use reverently all that by which God makes himself known. And this sign from the Lord he used as a mere means, it would seem, of entertainment. And yet the Lord was in this, in his providence, because the significance, of course, of the riddle was in itself a warning or a reproach or a denunciation of the Philistines and of what the Lord was going to do through Samson. And so this sinful marriage meant that this woman was not loyal to Samson, her husband, and that she, under threat, admittedly, from the wicked Philistines, was prepared to betray her husband in this thing, and that her loyalty was not really towards Samson. And likewise, Samson himself seems to put father and mother before her in verse 16. "Behold, I have not told it my father or my mother, and shall I tell it thee?" So it was a sinful marriage and not on a firm footing at all, with the result that there was no adequate confidence between Samson and his wife. And the result was that she deceived him, she wept before him the 7 days while their feast lasted, and it came to pass on the 7th day that he told her, because she lay sore upon him, and she told the riddle to the children of her people. And so at the very end of the feast, as the time limit was elapsing, the men of the city came and made it clear that they knew the meaning of the parable. What is strong, what is sweeter than honey, and what is stronger than a lion? And he said unto them, "If he had not ploughed with my heifer, he had not found out my riddle," which may imply nothing more than that they took advantage of his wife in order to find out the meaning of the riddle. But then we have the response of Samson, verse 19. "And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon, and slew 30 men of them, and took their spoil, and gave change of garments unto them, which expounded the riddle. And his anger was kindled, and he went up to his father's house." Ashkelon was 24 miles away. We're not told why he went to Ashkelon to kill these 30 men of the Philistines. Ashkelon was perhaps a city that was particularly bitter in their enmity towards Israel. But the obvious question we ask is, was this a sinful anger, or was it a godly anger? Was it purely and simply a case that Samson was annoyed, and that he, in his sinful, carnal rage, went and killed 30 men in Ashkelon? We think not. This incident brought home to him the lesson of the difference between the church and the world. This incident seems to have alerted him, at least in some measure, to the fact that he should be fighting the Philistines. And we'll find in Samson that he at times was, especially because of his desires, he compromised with the Philistines and had to be alerted and awakened to the fact that he was a servant of the Lord, and that the Philistines were the enemies of the church of God. You see, there are two ways of looking at this. One is to say that he was right when he was on good terms with the Philistines, and wrong when he became angry and fought against them. But we should look at it in the opposite way, that it was his situation was one of compromise with the Philistines, and his anger was kindled, and he was awakened out of that to treat the Philistines as the enemies of the Lord. And so what is happening here is, and it happens again later, it becomes more constant, is that Samson, in God's providence, was being aroused out of his stupor to treat the Philistines as the enemies of the Lord, and to recognize the difference between the church and the world. Now, he forgot that lesson again fairly quickly, but what I'm seeking to convey to you is that when we see Samson fighting the Philistines, we see Samson in his true role. That isn't to say that he was always perfect, or that he was ever perfect in the expression of that, but his fighting the Philistines was his true role. It was his calling from God to be Israel's deliverer. So then, two main lessons to keep in mind. One, the marvelous providence of God in using even the sinful actions of Samson in his providence to bring about this confrontation with the Philistines. And you'll find that the confrontations become more sustained until Samson is established as the deliverer of Israel and the one through whom the Lord was to fight, was to bring a great measure of deliverance for Israel. And the second thing we must learn is that compromise between the church and the world leads to a painful learning process in the providence of God. Samson compromised and experienced pain and an awakening. You see, the Lord loves his people and he does not leave them indefinitely if they seek to blur the distinction between the people of God and the world. And that was happening with Samson, that the Lord did not leave him without trouble-free in his compromises. The Lord dealt with him and taught him painfully and caused him to fulfill, in his case, his particular calling, not only as a servant of God in general, but as the one through whom the Lord was going to bring much deliverance to his people, Israel.